Hello and welcome to the Geological Society podcast, and to the third of our episodes focusing on the geology of the UK. So far, this summer's been all about water, not enough of it in the ground and too much of it falling from the sky. So why did we have hosepipe bans and torrential rainfall at the same time? And how is the country coping with the huge demand for water resources placed on us by the Olympics? I spoke to Professor Paul Younger, Director of the Newcastle Institute for Research in Sustainability, about groundwater, rainwater, and what happens in between. In terms of your work, what do you see sustainability as? You mentioned that it had over 200 definitions.
Yeah, well, we thought about this for quite a while because those 200 definitions tend to be a bit wordy and a bit, obscure. So we wanted to come up with something that's a bit easier to grasp, and we came up with a four-word definition, which is enough for all forever.
So that could refer to anything, not just groundwater, but
absolutely,
resources
yeah.
in general.
But it does refer to groundwater too. So if you think about sustainability of groundwater, it would be making sure there's enough groundwater of sufficient quality for the needs of ecosystems, for society, and for the economy. Really, anywhere on the Earth's surface where you choose to drill, you'll eventually hit groundwater. But the question isn't whether it's there, because it's pretty much ubiquitous. At least at some depth, you'll finally hit it. The question is whether the strata that it's present in are sufficiently fractured, sufficiently porous in other ways that they can transmit enough water to be of use and store enough water to be of use. And strata that meet that definition, we call them aquifers, carriers of water.
So this isn't Great Lakes and rivers, and this is water trapped within...
It's certainly not rivers, but a lake isn't a bad idea because, the water table tends to be pretty flat. Frank Chappell in the United States has talked about thinking about groundwater as the hidden sea, and I quite like that. I think that's a good image, because you've got this relatively flat surface of the water table that mimics the topography in a subdued manner, and it's pretty much ubiquitous. Quite how much water moves through any one part depends on what rock you've got.
In the UK, we don't generally think of ourselves as a drought-ridden country. It's quite a green, fertile-looking place. We think of drought as something that happens elsewhere, but
It
does seem to be happening more and more. Is water resources in general in the UK, are they a bit less than we perhaps expect them to be?
Well, I think people tend to think of, it rains all the time in London and, anywhere in Britain you care to name, people have that impression. Overseas they have that impression, and we don't help ourselves as Brits by whinging about the weather all the time. But the matter of fact is, the rainfall along the eastern half of England is really quite low by world standards. It's, the rainfall in Jerusalem is higher than it is in London. Having said that, the evapotranspiration, the loss of water back to the atmosphere, is far higher in Jerusalem than it is in the east of England. So the net rainfall, or the effective rainfall, is much higher here than it is in those sort of dry parts of the world. And that's why everything looks so green. Although it's been raining, because it takes usually months for the water to infiltrate from the soil surface down to the water table, which can be tens of metres below ground in a lot of areas, and the water's got to soak through a fairly low permeability strata to get there. And because that takes months, even though it's been raining a lot lately, that doesn't translate into an increase in the amount of water available down at the water table, which is where it needs to be for us to get at it. The other thing, of course, is that rain in the summer months, even if it can be overwhelming at times, most of it's used up by prolific plant growth. So the place looks wonderfully green at the moment. But that greenness tells you that a lot of that water's being used up and passed back into the atmosphere by evaporation and transpiration from leaves and so on.
So the rain's not doing us all that much good in terms of water resources.
No, but I think we could make it work harder for us. I really do. I think that in the UK we've been pretty slow to come up with innovative schemes to capture flood water and deliberately inject it into aquifers.
Right.
We have expertise in injection of water into aquifers, so-called artificial recharge. Precisely in London, in North London, Thames Water take water from the London Ring Main at night when there's low demand and the pressure's high, and there would otherwise be leakage from the main. They deliberately inject it into boreholes to create a strategic reserve in the north of London. We could think of doing this more with floodwaters.
So all this rainwater that we're getting now, we could actually...
We could. We'd have to put some infrastructure in to do it, but I think there's a huge amount of potential there that's not even being seriously investigated yet, let alone put into use.
So we're not going to see the benefit of this for another few months, if not longer than that.
Yeah, I mean, typically, no matter how heavy it rains in the summer, we don't really see the groundwater levels peak till about Christmas.
Mm.
So.
Okay, yeah. When people don't really want to sprinkle their lawns.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Presumably in London, we're pretty well fixed up for groundwater then, if it's within the chalk. We have a lot of chalk under the surface here.
Yes, and I mean, it was overexploited until the 1950s, and since then the water levels have been rising again in central London, which has introduced problems of its own, of course, because in the previous 100 years or so, to 1950, a lot of the underground infrastructure had been put in blissful ignorance that the water table used to be higher than that. So as the water levels are rising, this has posed some problems for some of the deeper tube lines and so on. But there's been work done on that now for a couple of decades to try and get that right. But yes, the chalk's still there. It's still a significant source of water. Even where it's not of quality for drinking water, it's been finding new uses recently in London for instance, groundwater cooling schemes. I've been involved with companies who've been involved in putting groundwater cooling schemes in Royal Festival Hall, for instance, and the various others throughout the capital. So it's beginning to find other uses beyond sort of conventional drinking water as well.
We're hearing a lot about at the moment, obviously, the Olympics in London,
yeah,
and in
yeah.
the whole country. Presumably groundwater has been a big concern when they've been developing the Olympic Park and sustainability.
Well, it has in a couple of ways. I mean, one is the important role of groundwater in the water supply of London. And if you've got a sudden transient high demand for water in the east end of London, which basically is at the bottom end of the water supply system in London, you know, because most water comes from the west and south, really. That's one issue, the pressure on water resources. And, you know, that's why Thames Water have been making the Beckton desalination plant ready to go if they need it, which they might given the drought conditions.
So this is using salt water and converting it basically into fresh water.
Yeah, that's right. So there's that water resources aspect, but also I happen to know from long experience in East London that in many parts of that area of London, the groundwater in the chalk has already risen close to surface. So building the foundations for all of these new structures and the East End has not been simple, you know. We learned a lot of lessons from this on the construction of the high-speed rail link. I was personally involved in dewatering of a thing called the Stratford Box at the Stratford Station there, and you know, a lot of that's below the water table. People don't realise because the amount of engineering that went into that. But to do the engineering, we had to first pump the groundwater down. And
just send it somewhere else?
Maybe. Yeah, for the time being.
Right.
Yeah.
So is that quite a temporary solution?
It's a temporary solution that allows you time to design and install buildings with permanent membranes in the foundations and basements and so on, so that you can allow the groundwater to come up outside of it and it won't infiltrate.
So it sounds like quite a lot of thought's gone into sustainability in terms of the Olympic season and groundwater.
Yeah, I think in broad terms, yeah, it has. And I mean, groundwater is always one of the difficult things to get right in the sustainability ledger, partly because there are relatively few people that, you know, really understand groundwater well. And, you know, there's not that many people who've studied it in great depth in the country. You know, there are a few thousand of us, I suppose. But the real problem in Britain is that we're just trying to cram too many people into too small an area. And, you know, we're beginning to really exceed the carrying capacity of the aquifers, particularly in the south and east. And this was, you know, predicted more than a decade ago by the Environment Agency. But the government since then, of all colours, have really ignored that being pointed out, you know.
So we've almost got it the wrong way around then. If there's less water resources in the east, and I mean, we think of places
yeah.
in the west like Manchester as being much more rainy, but our population seems to be so focused on the south and the east.
It is, and you know, and the predictions are for it to increase, you know, by another quarter over the next sort of 20 years or so, which is a problem because the southeast is already strapped for water resources, and other parts of the country are not. So if you were rational about it, you would say, well, let's have the intense development where we've got the water to support it. Instead, you have people saying, well, let's abandon the economy of the north and west of the country and just pipe water to the southeast. Trouble with that is it's about as bad as desalination because water is pretty heavy stuff. And if you're going to pump it long distances, you're going to use vast amounts of energy and you can kiss goodbye to your carbon footprint reduction strategy if you're going to do that. People keep saying, why haven't we got a national water grid? Well, no. The reason we haven't got a national water grid is that H2O is a lot heavier than an electron. You can get an electron along a cable with a lot less loss of energy than you can get water through a pipe.
But apart from that plan, is there anything else we can do if things are going to get tricky?
Well, I think we do need to think seriously about balancing up the regions of the UK as regards development, but I'm not particularly optimistic about that. I mean, the regional development agencies that we did have were all swept away in what I view as a rather cavalier fashion by the incoming government a couple of years ago, and you can already see the catastrophic consequences of that for balancing up regional development in the UK. But there are technologies that we're not using. As I say, we could be taking some of these floodwaters and injecting them into parts of the chalk where the groundwater levels are under stress, and we're not really seriously trying to do that yet. I think the reason for that is that the way we've divided up the water industry in this country, I mean, no country's perfect, and you're always going to divide it up some way or the other. But, you know, in having the Environment Agency there is, I think, in many ways, a very laudable and effective regulator, and having the water companies there with, a duty to supply, there isn't really anybody sat between the two of them that says, what's the overall way we optimise the water resources? You know, it's not quite the Environment Agency's duty. It's not quite the water company's duty, and there's a little bit missing there. We used to have things like the Water Resources Board a few decades ago that did have to think about that sort of thing, but we've sort of let that go with our current model of management in the water sector.
Would that be a role for the scientists, or is that a bit beyond their...
No, I think for sure it would be a role for scientists. We have plenty of expertise in this country. I mean, the Geological Society has just recently published a book on groundwater resources modelling, which I was delighted to see, because the UK is genuinely world-leading in the application of sophisticated mathematical modelling techniques to water resources. But, you know, what those insights lack really is the any agency with a proactive duty to optimise water resources. The Environment Agency is set up to be reactive, and, you know, the water companies are set up with a particular focus to supply. And there isn't really, there is a gap between the two remits, really, which hasn't been properly addressed, I think.
So it sounds like the problems are there, but the potential for the solution is also there.
I mean, there's plenty of grounds for optimism. There's plenty of expertise in the country that could be turned to these problems. We need to tweak our management system for water, I think, and not forget the connectivity of water into all the other areas of planning where we're on mind. We also need to get a bit more sensible about national and regional planning.
And you can view Professor Younger's recent Shell lecture, Sustainability of Groundwater in a Changing World, on our website at www.geolsoc.org.uk/groundwater. Or you can visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/geological society. In the next of our series, I'm off to Lyme Regis as the 2012 Earth Festival highlights why the Jurassic Coast is such a special place for geologists and tourists alike.